Hey, Dr. Borton.
Megan, always good to see you.
Great to see you. We're having a huge storm. And, I have to admit, moment of honesty time, I've been pretty caught up these days in the latest of the climate news and accepting grief over the life that we've already lost, but also getting frustrated about what to do in the face of extreme climate news, like the newest UN report just came out. We talked before about the 11,000 scientists who, signed the letter about how extreme the climate emergency is. But, the UN report just coming out saying that we are moving closer and closer to these tipping points, and then other sources saying, scientists in Exeter saying that we are at these tipping points. There are 11 different things that they're looking at. The melting of Antarctica, the Atlantic meridional overturning circulation, all of these different points of reference on the planet in which things are becoming, they're unraveling from what they're used to seeing in terms of patterns that you could rely on. So I just wanted to get your input on that, because also I feel like some of our listeners can relate to this. It can feel lonely. You're taking in this extreme information and then you really need a community to process it.
And right now we are experiencing a snowstorm, and it's rather cold out and lots of snow. What's happening is that there's more and more heat coming in at the equator, and the Earth is trying to keep an energy balance, meaning keep the same amount of energy. And the way it does that is it radiates heat back into space. And the best place for heat to radiate back into space is from the poles, the North Pole and the South Pole. Now, in order for heat to get there, you have to move the heat from the equatorial zones up toward the north. And if you're moving air up there, that's going to displace some cold air from there, and it's going to have to come south. And it's that mixing, that's weather and climate, that is trying to keep some equilibrium on our only little small blue planet.
What is your emotional reaction to this news? As someone who has been working in solar since 1974, so your life has always been geared towards this truth of how... Well, I would say it's a truth about our economy. It's a truth about our energy use and about how we live our lives. So what is your, given that your life has been about this, what is your emotional reaction to this news?
Well, there's a lot of, I'll call it sorrow. I'm sorry that I couldn't in my lifetime affect more people. But this is such a difficult long-term thing, and it's abstract. And abstract thinking can be difficult for a mammal that has survived through evolution by responding to short-term things. This is not a short-term thing. This is a long-term thing changing the whole climate on the Earth.
You know, if you take a philosophy 101 class, you learn about ethics. You know, you might read something like, Aristotelian ethics, or read Spinoza and think about, like you were talking about, abstraction, think about behavior and ideas of morality and right and wrong and abstraction about why certain, humans do certain destructive things or certain good things. So it feels like in that basic philosophy realm, you learn that if you come to know something, you should act on it. But we live in highly complex systems. And so the frustration that I have and that many of my friends have is that the systems bifurcate us from the natural world. And then it becomes hard to just look at that information and directly act. Now, I know many people that are acting in really creative ways to mediate that situation. But we also live in a post-colonial context in which our air, water, food has been taken as a resource, and then sold back to us. So in some ways, the news also highlights the trickiness of our systems. Would you agree?
Oh, yes. And let me give you an example, and that is that George Bush, who is not necessarily the most climate-friendly person, thought that there should be some mechanism to balance the playing field between gasoline cars and electric vehicles. And so he had, I believe it was the OMB that did an analysis of what it would take to balance this subsidy for gasoline cars with a subsidy for electric vehicles. And you know how big that subsidy is?
How much?
$7,500. Where did that number come from? And that number is looking at the U.S. subsidy for gasoline, which, depending on how you count, is between $5 and $15 per gallon. And if you extend that over some life of a vehicle and you discount that to present-day value, the people who did this calculation, came up with the number $7,500. So that's how much gasoline cars are being subsidized just to make an even playing field. And electric vehicles got that just to try to make it even. So it is very complex. It's abstract. We're talking here tax policy and politics. And so those are very difficult things. Science is pretty easy and straightforward. The scientists would say, okay, look, stop that subsidy today. Okay? Politicians don't think that way. So it's very difficult, as you said, it's a very difficult problem.
Over the holidays, my brother and I were talking about the complexity of how, you know, very wealthy countries, you know, countries that also we get the perception of as doing the right thing, like Sweden has many policies about recycling. And yet for the G20 countries, there are the huge fossil fuel subsidies. You know, you're just living with those contradictions, which can be really frustrating. And also the UN report said that in terms of the countries that are causing this pollution, it's all of the G20 countries.
Oh, yes. The history of what we call economic progress has been to devastate the natural resources of this planet. It's just incredible how much we use, and we think that use is good, and we think our life is better for all of this stuff that we have. Our houses are full of stuff. And the advertising wants us to buy more stuff. And all of this stuff is somehow or other degrading the environment of the whole planet.
So what would you say, as someone who's worked in solar energy for, you know, a great deal of your adult life, what would you say to your average human who is reading this news and feeling quite overwhelmed?
Well, get ready for change. Some of the change you can do yourself, and that will be hopefully very easy. Some of the change you can ask your politicians for, and that is probably quite difficult. Some of the change is probably in between, and that is things like looking at who you buy stuff from and how much stuff you buy. Those are choices that you make all the time, and if you start making those choices in a knowledgeable way about the environment, then you can start changing the economics of the whole problem.
I really like the idea of also changing forms of activism, moving activism from always being about one type of thing, whether that's nonviolent direct action protest or direct, you know, legislative appeal and going down the road of appealing to the policymakers, and starting to look at the world and say that activism can be any act of compassion with other humans on the earth right now, that is what is needed. You know, sometimes just listening is needed. Sometimes, you know, certain skills, if you know how to put up solar panels, you know, something, when the crisis is at this level, you could look at everybody and try to just say, look it, we're all in this together, almost like a call, like a hospice call. It's interesting, in those moments of hospice care, people get a sense of how valuable and precious life is and how little time we have. I keep thinking about that in the context of the climate emergency, that there's kind of this spiritual call to shape up and not act like time is infinite, and that this wasteful, stressful existence is all that we have, that we could be acting more compassionately.
Well, yes, and by talking about it on the radio, some people are going to understand what we're talking about, and they're going to think about it. And by thinking about it, they're going to change things in their lives. And that change, that education, is very important. So thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you, Dr. Borton.
It's always a pleasure, Megan.